Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Mike Norton, also known as New Name Noah. He's got a YouTube channel. The thing about the interviews, every 12-year-old child has to go in for an annual interview, and some of them are pretty rough. Anyway, tell us more about Stephen. What do you tell?
When Stephen realized that his mother, his bullies, his mother, his bishop, were members of this silly cult, and he's watching footage of Mormons in the temple doing these handshakes and wearing these ridiculous outfits, he instantly realized that the church wasn't true, that he was being bullied by cultists, literally, and he vowed that it was going to end. Well, Stephen's best friend was gay, and he made it clear to me, he's my best friend, he's not my boyfriend. And Stephen's best friend's mom had told him years before, because she knew his situation, that if he ever needs a place to stay, that he is welcome to stay at their home. And not just for a day or for a week, but for as long as he needed to. She did mention the fact that, okay, you have to be out by the time you're 25. But other than that, there are no limitations. So he packed up a bag, and he waited in the kitchen for his mom to get home. And when she walked in the door, he raises his hands to the air, and as he slowly lowers his hands three times, he said, "Oh, Mom, hear the words of my mouth. Oh, Mom, hear the words of my mouth. Oh, Mom, hear the words of my mouth." And he had a big old speech prepared for about how, you know, how dare she, you know, treat him like this, and who give her the right to tell anybody that he was gay and out him like she did. And he just had so much built up. And before he even finished saying, "Oh, Mom, hear the words of my mouth," three times, which is very clearly to her a blatant mockery of what she does and what Mormons do in the temple, he pointed at the door and said, "Get out of my house." And he said, "Gladly." And he grabbed his suitcase that he had packed up, and he told me, "You know, Mike, I know this sounds gay," he says, "but I practically skipped to my friend's house." Got to his friend's house. His mom was there. She invited him in with open arms. And so he was sitting there in his friend's room the same day. He shows his friend the video that he saw online of what they do in the temple and all that. And his friend saw my phone number in the comments and said, "Dude, you should call this guy. He saved your life today. This guy saved your life today. Here's his phone number right here." He said, "So that's why I'm calling you. I'm calling you to say thank you. You saved my life today." That was years ago. Stephen's 18 now. I actually heard from him for only the second time ever, actually, last July of last year. He called me out of the blue and said, I don't know if you remember me, but a few years ago I called, and as soon as he started telling me the story, I said, "Stephen, how could I possibly forget you, kid?" He's very happy. He had a boyfriend. He was going to college. I was not on speaking terms with his mother. He said, I've never been happier. He's just in a very happy, healthy place now. And Stephen is not alone. There are many, many, many Stephens out there. You know, suicide in Utah is the number one cause of death for children between the ages of 10 and 17, which is unusual. Most states, it's automobile accidents, but the suicide rate in Utah is literally, it's twice that of the national average. And a shockingly high number of those suicides are children that are part of the LGBTQ community. And there's another one online. You just Google Allison Transgender Denver Post. And there is an amazing article about a very brave young woman, a transgendered woman by the name of Allison, who was in a similar situation. Well, not quite as similar as Stephen. Her father's not LDS, but her mother is. But she was on the verge of suicide, very depressed, very sad, on the verge of suicide. And one day her brother showed her one of my videos. And the article said, Allison said, "It rocked my world. Everything that she thought she knew went out the window, and she instantly realized that the God of Mormonism, Elohim, the exalted man god of flesh and bone, who's polygamist and lives near a star called Kolob, she realized this is not the God that I believe in. and instantly knew that the Mormon church is not true. And it changed her entire outlook on life. And suddenly she became outgoing and wanted to live. And these are just two of what is undoubtedly hundreds of stories. I've had 628 people since 2002 contact me directly via phone call, text message, emails, in person, or whatever, and tell me point blank, because of what you do, I either left the Mormon church or I didn't join, but I almost did. And there is nothing more rewarding than that. Having somebody call me out of the blue, a complete stranger, saying, do you have any idea how much you changed my life with this information and this revelation? My response is, yeah, I got a pretty darn good idea, because I went through the whole thing myself. There is somebody that put some information online that opened my eyes. I think all Mormons have what we call a shelf breaker. With Mormons, when they come across problems with their belief or their faith system, they kind of mentally put this objection or problem on a mental shelf where they just, you know what, someday we'll have answers, probably when we die. So they just kind of put it on the shelf. And that shelf gets awfully heavy with items that conflict with their faith. And eventually, I think almost all Mormons have some sort of a shelf breaker. There's something that causes that shelf to break and them to realize it's not true. And for some people, it's the way they treat the LGBT community. For some people, it's the fact that the church leaders are paid over $120,000 a year for what they do. For some people, it's the fact that the church spent $1.5 billion on a shopping mall with a multi-million-dollar retractable glass roof in Salt Lake City. These are sacred funds, and they may say, "Well, we didn't use tithing to build that shopping mall." Really? Okay. If you didn't use tithing, it all started with tithing. At some point or another, it was tithing that paid for something, that paid for a business, that made the profits, that made the money, that earned the money, that made that shopping mall. And you have to ask yourself, what would Jesus buy? If Jesus Christ were here today, would he be spending billions of dollars on a shopping mall and use the excuse, well, I didn't use tithing money to build that. That's just extra money that I had from a side job that I'm doing. Really? Is that what Jesus would do? Now, I'm not a Christian. I don't subscribe to Christianity, so I'm not going to pretend to be any expert on Christianity or what Jesus Christ would or would not do, but I am quite familiar with the New Testament, and I have read it, and I think I understand the gospel of Jesus Christ very well. And the gospel of Jesus Christ would never promote or endorse spending billions of dollars on a shopping mall while there are children starving to death in the world. There's just no way.
I agree. Totally, I agree. As you were talking about tithing, I remember reading that Brigham Young never paid tithing. And excuse me.
Not only did he not pay it, he actually, but he had no problem spending it. He may not have paid it, but he had no problem spending it. Brigham Young spent money that was brought in from the church coffers like it was going out of style.
Right. And it took 40 years to build the Salt Lake Temple, and he kept stringing it out. He would say, okay, we need some money for the windows. So he would have these big campaigns. It was the same as Joseph Smith. You string something out so that you can keep collecting money, extra money.
They're playing the long con. Yeah, Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, all of the Mormon leaders, this isn't a short con. This is a long-term con, and there's a lot of nepotism in Mormon leadership as well. There's a reason why you see the names Smith or McConkie or Kimball come up again and again and again, because they try to keep the wealth in the family. And in many ways, they're really not a lot different from the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. You know, Warren Jeffs, who's sitting in prison for marrying little girls to other men and stuff, The only difference between Warren Jeffs and Joseph Smith is about 160 years. They're both pedophiles who fleeced their flock on a regular basis and did it all in the name of God and claimed that they were the prophet of the only true church of God on earth. And a lot of Mormons today don't realize how closely they came to dodging that bullet, because they could just as easily, instead of being born into an LDS family, they could have been born into an SLDS family and been a child of some sister wife, some polygamous sister wife, and they could be wearing little prairie dresses down in southern Utah. It's a fine line between Mormonism and fundamentalist Mormonism, I'll tell you that.
Well, fundamentalism wouldn't exist without Joseph Smith.
No, and there's so many splinter groups. There's a new splinter group that's sprung up by a man by the name of Denver Snuffer. They call themselves the Remnant Movement. And literally, just within the last few years, 5,000 to 10,000 people have chosen to follow this Denver Snuffer. Some people refer to them as Snufferites. It's amazing to see a brand new Mormon splinter group spring up just over the last few years.
That is amazing.
It is. I mean, you would think the splinter groups are a thing of the past and you're not going to see any new splinter groups, but not so much. Denver Snuffer is, in my opinion, the latest in a long chain of professional con artists who prey on gullible, naive LDS people.
Right.
Sad. So sad.
Now, initially, Joseph Smith wrote the Book of Mormon in order to make some money. He really didn't anticipate beginning a religion, that it just sort of evolved. And he actually sent somebody up to Canada to try to sell the copyright. And the first Book of Mormon said that he was the author. And so the idea of a church just sort of evolved, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the whole thing started as a money-making scheme. And, yeah, and absolutely. It kind of morphed into a religion. They were unsuccessful, but they did try to actually sell the copyright to the Book of Mormon in Canada, but were unsuccessful in doing so. So I think Joseph kind of stuck it out and was like, you know what, maybe I can – I seem to be having a large following. Maybe I'll just tell them that they need to start paying tithing, that the tithing is required. And then it wasn't until the 1840s, the church started in 1830, until the 1840s when he created the endowment ceremony. Mormonism is constantly evolving. I think it's fascinating that I went back last year to document new changes made in the temple ceremony, and I went undercover for about 3 months, disguised myself. I used to be a private investigator, and so
yes,
I disguised myself.
Yes, tell us about that. Tell us about that.
I don't have much time left, so I've got to go here soon. But
okay. In
a nutshell, they constantly changing the temple endowment ceremony, not just the endowment ceremony, but other rituals in the temple. And because of these changes, I wanted to go back to the temple and document the changes. And so I disguised myself and attended a local ward in Phoenix, Arizona, actually. And for several months, I attended religiously. I mean, I had a calling in the ward. I had a home teacher. I paid tithing, and I went to the temple a lot. And I documented the entire thing. I actually was recording everything with hidden cameras on my YouTube channel. I've got a docuseries that I'm still actually in the process of making. I've released 11 episodes. There'll be a total of 14, possibly 15 episodes, and it's called Making of Behind the Veil 2. It kind of speaks for itself. You watch the videos starting with episode 1. I've got a playlist on my YouTube channel. Just click on the playlist and watch through them. Some of the episodes are 6 or 7 minutes long. There's at least one episode that's nearly an hour long. But most of them, on average, I think they're about 15 minutes long. And it just kind of walks you through the entire 84-day experience that I had last year, where I, for the first time in 15 years, went back to the Mormon Church and participated in all the ceremonies and rituals and all that in an effort to document the newest, latest changes made in the temple. And it was quite an experience, to say the least. Nothing quite like being out of Mormonism for 15 years and going back inside. I tell people when they ask what I do, I tell people, although this is not what I do for a living, I tell people I'm a documentary filmmaker. And I describe myself as kind of like the Leah Remini of Mormonism, but I'm not famous and I'm not rich. And instead of writing a book like Leah Remini did and interviewing members, I strapped on multiple hidden cameras and went back into my cult, Mormonism, and documented the creepy, weird stuff that goes on and posted it online. I wish Leah Remini would have. She certainly has the budget. Leah Remini could have disguised herself and went back into Scientology and documented the abuse and the creepy rituals. But, she has her own little style, and I think it's very admirable. But I have a bit more of an aggressive approach to Mormonism than Leah does with Scientology. But I think we both are very passionate about exposing the cult that we grew up in.
And for that, many, many people are grateful. And the other thing that you pointed out in your series, supposedly Mormon leaders have the spirit, they have perception, and they can tell when a member is lying or being deceitful. And you totally expose the fact that, nope, they do not have the perception that they claim. And I think Richard Lyman proved that when he was living with a plural situation for, was it like 25 years? And he was an apostle, and even his fellow apostles did not realize it, that he was that he had a plural wife. And this was from 1920 to 1945. And so you really have to say, gosh, they really don't have the spirit, or they would notice these things. They would be able to perceive these things, and you certainly prove that.
Yeah,
they
call the power of discernment. They believe, especially bishops. Bishops, according to the Doctrine and Covenants, are blessed with the power of discernment, so that they can discern the intentions of people. And part of the reason why I did what I did last year was to push the envelope as far as possible. I wanted, on the power of discernment, I wanted to prove beyond any reasonable doubt that if there is the power of discernment in Mormonism, you sure can't find it, because not a single solitary person throughout the entire process. And I keep in mind, I recorded with multiple hidden cameras my worthiness interview for a temple recommend with the bishop, with the stake president. In fact, in one episode, I think it was episode 10 or 11, I actually have on the screen a lie-o-meter and a discern-o-meter to kind of jokingly keep track of how many times I lie and how many times the stake president actually calls me on my lie and says, I don't feel like that's truthful. Now, he just hands me a temple recommend. And let's just say that it was the final score on the lie-o-meter and discern-o-meter was kind of a blowout, and he was not on the winning side. But, it's fun stuff. Definitely go to YouTube channel New Name Noah, click on my playlist, and there's a playlist for the Behind the Veil series, and you can watch all 11 episodes. I'll have episode 12 coming out in the very near future, probably within the next week. It'll be a longer episode because episode 12 is going to cover day 77 out of 84 days when I taught the high priest group.
Wonderful.
Fun stuff.
Wonderful. Well, I certainly do appreciate you being with us today, and I know that you have to go, and thank you very much for staying over. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
All right.
Have a good one.
You too,
bye-bye.
Mike. Bye-bye. Okay, we'll be taking calls, so call in with questions. Be right back.
the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we'll take your calls at 800-313-9443. Mike had to leave. He was actually only going to be able to spend 2 hours with us, but he did stay on for some extra time. I would like to just reiterate that I believe that Michael Collins Piper wrote the very best and most comprehensive book on what functioned as a public execution of John F. Kennedy. Okay, let's take Chris near Las Vegas. Chris, welcome to the program.
Well, hello there, Deanna, and what a distinct pleasure it is to speak with your lovely self again.
Well, thank you. And
you know,
happy Veterans Day.
I really admired Michael and his work and his investigative research in exposing some of the fraud of these legions of men who like to usurp the alleged powers of the Creator and claim that they are the dispensation of the will of the Creator on this planet, when they really are just imposters and trying to prey upon the people's weakness and their belief systems and their desire to find some link with something they can see that's tangible to give substance to their belief system.
Do you realize that the Mormons pretty much funded the casinos in Las Vegas? Are you aware of the early history of Las Vegas and how the Mormons impacted that area?
Oh, absolutely. They were on their way to Salt Lake from different areas of the planet, and they located here because there was water sources at the Meadows, which is what Las Vegas means. In fact, it's very curious. There was also an area up close there and up near Cedar City and St. George where they had the Mormon Massacre when they donned attire or costumes of Indians and attacked some of the westward settlers who they feared was threatening their Mormon way of life.
Well, that had more to do with blood atonement than any kind of a threat. The blood atonement is something that was created or perpetuated by the death of Joseph Smith. They decided that they were going to get even with people, and so anyone from any of the area, and also Parley P. Pratt, another Mormon, he was an apostle, was killed. And he was killed, I believe it was in Arkansas. And so anybody from Arkansas, excuse me, anyone from Arkansas was a target. It didn't matter whether they had anything to do with it or not, which is kind of unusual because one of the 13 articles of faith is that we believe that man will be punished for his own sins and not for Adam's transgression, which would also imply that people will be punished for their own sins and not for what somebody else has done. But the church was really into blood atonement. And they said that there were certain crimes that were committed that the atonement of Jesus Christ did not cover. And the only way that they could be atoned for would be if a person killed themselves or allowed themselves to be killed, or as a revenge tactic, such as what we know about with the Mountain Meadows Massacre, where at least 120 people, including children, were slaughtered. And it was the Mormons, and it was Brigham Young knew about it. He knew about it, and Albert Smith knew about it and participated in it. It was nothing happened in Utah that Brigham Young did not either acquiesce to or know beforehand or allow.
That's rather interesting. I hadn't observed and put together that Parley P. Pratt was killed in Arkansas, but I guess that kind of one-ups Hillary Clinton being the first ones to commit arsenicide, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, the reason that he was killed is that he decided to take another wife, and so he married somebody that was already married. And it was her husband that actually killed him. And just as an interesting side note, my grandfather was named Parley P. The last name is Taylor, but he was named after this apostle, as were a lot of other people.
Huh. That's very curious. You've got so many little secrets to your life that we don't usually hear. Thanks for sharing that with me.
Well, anybody that's
done some research.
Anybody that wants to call in and ask me a personal question about this, I'll be happy to answer. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I had also cognized on my own due diligent research and reading some of the former prophets that had left the church and discovered that the early foundational core members of the Joseph Smith entourage were all, in fact, 33rd degree Mosons or Masons, as we know them.
Well, not all of them. His brother Hiram was a Mason. There are some claims that his father was a Mason. Heber C. Kimball was a Royal Ark Mason. So there were a lot of people who were Masonic. And, that's why the Masonic ritual became a part of the temple endowment. In fact, it became a part of the temple endowment after Joseph Smith joined the Freemasonry.
Well, it's very unusual, and I don't think it's without some foundational coincidences that I had discovered a very dark cult of satanic child pedophilic murderers and sex abusers up in that Salt Lakes area near West Jordan and American Fork, Utah in particular. I think they've very much operated throughout the whole Salt Lake Valley. And this is when I discovered the FBI was pretty much deeply involved in this sort of stuff, too, or at least elements within. I think I hear music.
I don't hear anything.
Oh, okay.
We should, but maybe they forgot. Okay, so great if they forgot.
Thank you.
Okay. Regarding the, okay, I guess Chris hung up. All righty, let's take J.R. I was going to respond to Chris with the Glenn L. Pace, one of the members of the presiding bishop, wrote a report. He interviewed some 60 people and about the pedophilia and about satanic rituals. And of course, it never came to anything because most of the judges and the legislation in Utah is pretty much controlled by the Mormons. And in the temple, you pretty much devote yourself to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and to building up the kingdom of God. And just as in Freemasonry, you don't tattle on your fellow Masons or your fellow Mormons. Okay, so let's take J.R. in California. J.R.?
Hi, Deanna.
Hi.
Hey, really enjoyed the show today and appreciated Mike. He's from my hometown.
Really? And, isn't he terrific?
Yeah. I actually probably either went to one or the other of the Mormon, at that time they were called Stakes, there in Visalia. It was the corner of Tulare and Conyer, and was made familiar with the Mormon religion. And my best friends, the way I got involved, were they were all my high school friends. And, you know, we started hanging out together and stuff. And Mike is the first person that has ever mentioned anything that they taught me back in those days, which was that the early Mormons were very mechanized and understood machinery and had built all kinds of different machinery themselves. And any other missionaries and any other Mormons that I've come into contact with have never been offered that knowledge, and it was like, you know, it was a revelation to him. I was curious. I was hoping I could speak to him regarding that.
Yeah, he was only going to stay for 2 hours because he had another obligation. But he did stay over a little bit longer than he planned to, for which I'm grateful. With the Mormon Church, they will use the skills of the members to the max. There's a lot of free labor involved. There's a lot of game preserves that the Mormons own. There are just all kinds of businesses. For instance, the girls' camps that were started under the jurisdiction. Well, there's always been girls' camps, but when Susan Tanner was the president of the Young Women, they bought just dozens and dozens of properties for girls' camps. And the maintenance during the year, because they have to be maintained during the year, and all of the work is done by volunteers who are called on a mission to do what they do. And they don't get paid for it. In fact, they pay their own way. And some of the buildings have been built. For instance, the Polynesian Cultural Center was mostly built from volunteer labor. And the people that participated there were doing it on a volunteer basis, except for the managers. And yet it is a for-profit industry. And when you look at the for-profit industries, and Mike did mention City Creek Mall, that is a for-profit industry. Now, under the way that they finance that mall is that they paid cash. And when you pay cash, under certain circumstances, if you're a 501c3 corporation and you declare you're a nonprofit, because they paid cash for the mall, all of the people that lease the stores, whether it's Nordstrom's or whomever, all of the people who are leasing in that particular in City Creek Center, all that is non-taxable. The church does not pay any tax on that. So, and they also built a lot of apartment complexes in and around the mall. And of course, they sold those. So the church is really not a church. The Mormon Church is a corporation.
And you know, like the United States government, same situation.
Absolutely.
By the way, they still own a large degree of either, what was it, Coke or Pepsi?
That I'm not sure, but they just recently started selling Coke at BYU. Now, when I was a member, we never drank Coke because it was not. I wouldn't drink soda anyway. But
no,
but
it's Coke, for a button.
Coke was a no-no.
Yeah,
Coke was a no-no, but now it's okay. And I would not be surprised if they didn't own stock in it. They own stock in a lot of things.
No,
they own
back in the day, that was the whole thing. I mean, it was kind of like I was asking my buddy, I said, wait a minute, how come Coke owns or the Mormon Church owns stock in Coke and they forbid you to drink it? Oh, and then it was kind of like Mike was saying, all of a sudden things change.
Sure.
Oh, it's okay to drink Coke now.
Right.
Cool.
Well, it's in the whole Word of Wisdom came about in a very interesting way. In the School of the Prophets, which was in Kirtland, they met up in the upper room, and the Smiths were living on the Whitney property. If you look at the history, you'll see that they always seem to be living with someone. Anyway, the School of the Prophets met upstairs, and after the meetings was over, Emma would have to go upstairs and clean up all of the tobacco and all of the I guess they chewed tobacco and they would spit on the floor. Pretty gross. And she didn't like having to clean it up. And so she complained and she said, it's too bad that there couldn't be a revelation against smoking. And then, just getting even with her or as a respond to her, the guy said, yeah. So, and then we'll have to say that the women can't drink tea or coffee, which they really enjoyed. So the whole thing with the Word of Wisdom really started as kind of a joke or because of Emma's complaint. And there were a lot of groups already in the area that were saying...
Sounds like a short story. Emma's complaint.
Yes. Yes.
That would make a wonderful short story.
Well, David Whitmer talked about this. He wrote about this.
Complaint. Oh,
and that's how it started. But there were temperance organizations all around there that were saying, okay, don't eat a lot of meat, no coffee, no tea, no smoking, no liquor. So it wasn't as if Joseph Smith came up with this new health law that was any different than what they were already preaching in the area. And yet, to hear Mormons talk about it now, it was as if it were a brand new thing. And wasn't he wonderful? And he was before his time. No, he really wasn't. It started out as a joke, and that's what we have. And the church,
story about the plates was too good.
Right. And the church really didn't start living the Word of Wisdom until the 1900s, probably 1920-ish. And Brigham Young owned a distillery. They had a bar in the Hotel Utah. In fact, they got a loan, a $2 million loan from the Eastern Bankers, Bernard Baruch, to build the Hotel Utah, and the only way that they could pay it back within 2 years, which was the stipulation of the loan, is that they decided that they would put a bar in the basement.
I'm surprised they weren't running prostitution.
Well, polygamy pretty much would fall under that. And as far as polygamy, many of the women that I've read about actually were just pretty much slaves. Eliza Webb, she was put in charge of one of Brigham Young's wives. She was put in charge of one of his farms. And she had to really work very hard. Her mother helped her, and they were furnishing cheese and other dairy products, milking cows and everything else. They were furnishing dairy products for the Beehive House and for the other families. But she was working herself to the bone, and she got absolutely no support from Brigham Young. So if you look into the stories of how the women survived, especially when their husbands were called on missions, a lot of them were just left to fend for themselves. So, anyway.
Well, Deanna, the question that I had, and I don't know if you can help me with this, I would be very interested to get Mike's phone number. And by the way, have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Bill Schnevelin?
I have. I think I watched a video that he did.
Is he the person that was a occultist and was told by the...
I think so.
And he was told by the high occultist, if you ever have a spiritual problem, go to the Mormon Temple in Salt Lake City. And when Mike mentioned the... Curse of Cain. Supposedly, Cain is living there underneath Salt Lake City, according to Bill Schnevelin.
Yeah, that's a little far-fetched.
Well, I don't know. It makes a good story. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Mike did give his phone number at the end. So, JR, if you're listening... and also, if you visit his YouTube channel, you would probably find his phone number there. So if anyone has any questions or comments about Mormonism, I'd be happy to answer them, whether it's personal, from my own life, experiences with the church, or if you'd like to talk about Veterans Day. Veterans Day is, I do not celebrate Veterans Day. When you think of the things that have occurred, and I was talking to my son earlier today, and we were talking about Veterans Day, and how many people are slaughtered, literally slaughtered in other countries, and people get recruited or join the military without any idea about what they're going to experience. And many of them come home without their limbs. They come home with post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of them come home and are put on psych drugs. And there are 22,000 former veterans who commit suicide each year. Now, that's a very large number. So, anyway, if you want to call in, it's 800-313-9443. A little bit about my story, how I became involved with Mormonism. I was actually born into it. Now, my mother was, start with my grandparents. My grandparents, one of them was first generation from England, and my grandmother was from Denmark. Her father practiced polygamy. He worked on the Logan Temple. He was a carpenter. He was jailed with John Taylor. He actually was hurt. A door fell on him when he was a carpenter at the Logan Temple. And anyway, so I was born into it. My mother got married when she was relatively young. My grandfather, Parley P. Taylor, he drank a lot. And he was pretty brutal to my grandmother. And so they left the rest of the family, and they moved to Nevada, where her brothers could not retaliate for his brutality to my grandmother. But anyway, my mother got married very young. She was only 15, and she was, I think she was very traumatized by her family, her life. And anyway, she also drank. Well, she was an alcoholic. I guess if somebody drinks every day, they're an alcoholic. And so anyway, she was not active in the church. She would be considered a Jack Mormon. And when I was 9 years old, and I had an older brother, my mother didn't like having her kids around during the summer. And so we usually got shipped off to our relatives. We were living in California at the time, in Sacramento. My parents shipped us off to Nevada to our aunt, and we just loved staying with our aunt and uncle. It was wonderful. I used to ride bikes up into the hills, and it was just a really great. And my aunt always made cookies, and she was just a really, really great aunt. I just really loved having her. Anyway, while I was there in Nevada one summer when I was nine, my grandmother had remarried after my grandfather died. He died very young. He died at the age of 52. And so my grandmother had remarried, and her husband baptized me and my brother. And that's how I got baptized. And then I became a member of record, so that when I went back to Sacramento, the records were sent to Sacramento. And so I was on the records of the Mormon Church. Okay, let's take a phone call from Susie in Arkansas. Susie, welcome.
Hi, Deanna.
Yes.
I have a question. And my sister is a Mormon. And I'm not happy about it. I can't imagine how people, as you kind of, you were talking about it during your interview. And I was wondering, is there any way at all that I can say something or ask her a question that would wake her a little? I hate to see her. She works so hard for her money, and to give all that to the church that doesn't give a darn about her. And I know that the people who join the church, I know they're lovely people. It's the hierarchy. Is so.
The members are wonderful. The members are just wonderful. The problem is that, the appeal of Mormonism, and it was the appeal back in the 1830s, is that Mormonism answered all the questions, and it was created in a puritanical kind of an environment, and it answered questions that no other church was addressing. Where did you come from? Why are you here? Where are you going? And so it has a great deal of appeal. Now, is your sister married or single or?
And Deanna, I have no idea how she's been able to do this, but she has been married. 1, 2, 3, four different men, and one of them three times.
Wow.
How does he do that and still be in good standing with the church?
I don't know, because I don't know.
It just amazes me.
Yes. What you should do is probably suggest that she read the CES letter. CES letter.
I begged her to read some of the information that is not pro-church. But, you know, she believes in the authority.
Okay, hang on. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we still have Susie on the phone. Susie, I would recommend that she read the CES letter. All you have to do is, in fact, I'll post it on my schedule page, but if she just uses a search engine and put in CES letter, and it's a PDF document, it's about 72 pages or so, and it has a lot of very interesting information. As Mike was saying, everybody has things that kind of bother them, and they just put them up on the shelf, and just you know, something that you can deal with, and maybe you'll learn about it later. And as I was a Mormon for a very, very long time, and I would these things would crop up, and I would just say, well, it's just my lack of understanding. It must be me. But when you really look at the history, and I'm a history buff, and when you look at the history, you just can't refute the history. And I think probably my shelf breaker was the polygamous activities of Joseph Smith. I just do not believe that a 37-year-old man who is already married and who lies to his wife and lies to the public and says, no, we're not practicing polygamy, and then marries a 14-year-old girl. That was my shelf breaker. That's pedophilia. So there might come a time when your sister might have a shelf breaker. But everyone has to come to their decision on their own, what it's going to be. The other thing is the corporate nature of the church and the money that is spent, the land that is owned. It's beyond anyone's imagination. They are in so many businesses. They're big cattle raisers. Here they're talking about eating meat sparingly and only in winter, according to the 89th section of the Doctrine and Covenants. Yet they raise more cattle than just about any other entity in the country. And so you have to ask, what's the deal? And when Gordon B. Hinckley was on, I believe he was on 60 Minutes, he was asked about polygamy and said, oh, that's something you do. That's in the past, and we don't do that anymore. But in fact, it is still in the scriptures. And he knows better than that. He knows it's in the scriptures. And so there's lying, and there's just concealing the truth. And both are not very good.
It would seem to me that the Mountain Meadow Massacre would be a shelf breaker.
That was a shelf breaker for me also. When I've read a couple of books on the Mountain Meadows Massacre, and it was tear-jerking, absolutely. And just, the other thing, the hand carts. That was just the hand carts, the people who suffered during the hand carts. Oh, my gosh. That was to save money. To save money. Thank you, Susie, for your phone call.
Thank you, Diana, for all you do.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Take care.
Accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Truth. Who is it now? Yeah!